The following program is part of the Inner Circle Podcasting Group. Go to innercirclecomics.com for more high-quality podcasts.
Ask my question! The question, jerk!
Hey, listen, nerds. It's time for another Two-Headed Nerd Answer of the Week podcast with Joe and Matt.
Wow! You just tuned into the best show on the internet, the Two-Headed Nerd Answer of the Week. You know why it's the best? Because Joe and I shut the fuck up and listen to you guys talk for a little while.
Well, we tried to shut the fuck up, but You guys said,
We still come in and interrupt and make fun of you guys. But here's how it works. My name's Matt Baum. I'm one of the hosts of Two-Headed Nerd. Across from me is Joe Patrick. Say hi!
What's up, dorks?
You will know us from the Two-Headed Nerd comic book podcast. It's our regular show. You probably listen to it if you're listening to this every week. Joe Patrick puts the question of the week up on the Two-Headed Nerd forums, and then you guys can call us at the Google Voice line, 402-819-4894. Leave us a message, or you can send us your MP3 recording of your answer to twoheadednerd@gmail.com. And it sounds like, well, it sounds like some stuff that's coming. But first, Joe, I need you to tell us, what was the question this week?
This week's question came from Black Scorpion the 3. Last week, when we recorded the show, it was D-Day, June 6th.
D-Day.
And he thought it was appropriate to ask, what are our favorite Nazi fighting stories in comic books?
Ratsies. Ratsies. I love it. Let's get right into it. We got an American here that we know and we know well. I don't know if he's a member of the Greatest Generation, but his name is Shonix.
Yeah, we'll see if I get picked. Probably get skipped because they don't want the truth out.
Oh, shut up.
Anyway, this is Shonix, you listeners. And a word of warning. Don't be a THN love slave because they're not lying about what's going on. I mean, I called in to talk about Mr. Sinister. I mean, that's it. That's what I contributed to become a love slave. And I was black bagged and woke up in a kennel.
We were completely honest about what was going to happen the whole time.
There's an actual ziggurat. They're not lying. John Littrell was there. Others were there. But John Littrell was there. He's wearing a gimp outfit.
Hey, he showed up with that on, okay?
He brought that from home.
He brought his own. He's content on being there. Some of the other ones were too. I couldn't see them. The only light down there was over a draft table. Time to time, Joe would be there drawing, and then Matt would come down and look at what Joe had done, laugh maniacally, then throw it away, and then Joe would cry, and we'd have to drink his tears. I'm just glad Toots and I have this kind of psychic bond, and it was strong when I was in Omaha, and he was able to hear my cries, and I don't know how he got Joe out of the ziggurat. I don't know how he got me out of there, but during Ocon, I was able to get out and get home, and I'm safe, and I don't have much else. I think it was Joe. He likes Arrow now, I guess. I don't know. All I do know is that I really liked Uncanny X-Men 268 when you had a young Cap, a young Logan, and a young Black Widow back in 1941 fighting Baron Strucker in the Hand. They were trying to kidnap her to turn her into an assassin for the Hand. And there's a lot of Nazi punching going on in that bad boy. I got Claremont and Lee to sign that. It's one of my favorite Jim Lee covers.
That's a great one. That was a great issue, too. I think that was where we first met Baron Strucker's Satan Claw?
No.
Oh, no, that was a what if. That was like Wolverine Agent of S.H.I.E.L.D. or something like that.
No. The Satan Claw is way old.
Oh, maybe I just remember the first time I saw Jim Lee draw it, and I went, that is cool. Cool.
Wolverine. Well, that Wolverine comic, that What If Wolverine comic, was drawn by Rob Liefeld. So,
oh, was it?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
A young, fresh-faced Rob Liefeld.
Yeah, I forgot there was a time where I liked him.
Yeah.
Huh. Nice call, Shonix. That was a good one. And I instantly pictured that cover in my head the second he said it.
I'm sorry, Sean. Your answer was cut off because you spent your first 2 minutes rambling incoherently.
It wasn't cut off. He ended it.
Play along, will you?
Oh, okay. I heard him and Toots tapping on their kennels. We'll have to put an end to that. Definitely.
Yeah, there's some real Shawshank stuff going on down in the basement. We're going to have to put an end to it.
Well, I also noticed since this call, he ended up back here because he had nowhere to go. So
yeah, right.
Welcome back to the family.
I'm glad that we, regardless of his feelings on his time here, we can all agree. The one thing we all agreed on is that John definitely brought his own gimp outfit.
Yeah. Showed up with the gimp outfit on and said, what are we doing today, boys? And Anthony from Brooklyn, one of our geographically named listeners, one of our favorites. He writes in, Nazi Fights is the name of the MP3 he sent us. This guy fucking hates Nazis. I'll tell you what, he ain't no Nazi friend. I played that dick song on the last episode. I love that song.
All right, Matthew, this is for you. Oh. Hello, Joe and Matt. Hello, listeners. It's Anthony from Brooklyn. Now, if we're talking favorite Nazi fights, I got three words for you. Nazi Captain Marvel. Now, when I say Captain Marvel, I mean the real deal here, not the Marvel Captain Marvel. I'm talking the Big Red Cheese, the artist currently known as Shazam, which makes no sense, am I right? Anyway, in All-Star Squadron issues 36 and 37, Hitler, using the Spear of Destiny, is able to summon Captain Marvel from Earth-S. He separates Billy Batson from Captain Marvel. Now, this makes Captain Marvel susceptible to Nazi idealism. So Hitler redubs him Super Nazi and sends him out to attack Great Britain, giving a whole new meaning to the word blitzkrieg. Am I right? Anyway, Superman catches wind of this and gets super pissed. First of all, the guy's called Super Nazi. That's a direct slap in the face to the Man of Steel.
Woo!
Also, Superman says this guy's just a carbon copy of me, which is really meta, if you think about it. Anyway, Superman flies to Britain to face the Super Nazi and, spoilers, gets his ass royally kicked. All right? Now, across these issues, you got the Golden Age Batman, the Golden Age Flash, and the Golden Age Plastic Man putting the hurting on some Nazi soldiers. But the highlight, I gotta tell you, is seeing the Justice Society take on Nazified Marvel family members. I'm talking Cap, I'm talking Cap Jr., I'm talking Mary Marvel. It's awesome. A couple of panels that I remember and love. There's a real chilling panel where the Marvel family is standing there all Nazi salute and saying Heil Hitler. Chilling, chilling. And then... My favorite has got to be when they got to get somewhere, right? And Freddie Freeman's like, hey, how are we going to get there? And Wonder Woman's like, we're going to take my invisible plane. And Freddie says, invisible plane? Where? It's hilarious.
Hey-o.
Anyway, thanks. I'll talk to you later. Bye.
Anthony finally accepts his Brooklyn heritage and out comes the accent. That was beautiful, buddy.
Loved it.
Because normally he's just a very well-spoken lad that we wish sounded like that.
All-Star Squadron.
I don't know that issue. I haven't read those. Do you know those?
I love All-Star Squadron. I mean, I haven't read those particular issues, but yeah.
Okay, you didn't read that one.
Nope, I haven't read it.
All right. I don't know. So when did that come out? Is this 80s?
80s. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah, early 80s.
Okay. Anthony might also be older than we think. He could be an old dude like us.
Well, how old do you think he is, Matt?
I don't know. Right? He sounds 20s. Could be 50s. Okay. I don't know. I mean,
yeah, it could be 50s.
Thank you for your call, Anthony. Thank you for the accent. That was wonderful. You know who else hates fucking Nazis? Randy Andrews.
Greetings, Joe and Matt. This is Randy Andrews emailing in for the question of the week. This week you asked, what is our favorite Nazi story? Not really about Nazis, but, you know, beating up Nazis, taking names, pulling the punches, making sure that they're not standing anymore. Well, guys, I know this is a long shot, but personally, for my favorite Nazi story, it's actually out of Danger Girl. Yes, I know. Danger Girl. Because the Hammer is an offshoot of the Nazis. And there were very similar things about that cult that were very similar to what the Nazis wanted done. They wanted world domination. So did the Hammer. And by the end of the first run of the series, the Danger Girl team had beaten the pants off the Hammer, which was great. And it was an awesome
and
final issue.
Nude.
So that's my answer this week, guys. Hope you like it. Check out my soundtrack blog at soundtrackalley.net. And this week, my music is from Parade of the Ewoks from the Andrew Allen Trio called Live from the Cantina. And that's it this week, guys, and see you in a week. Bye for now.
What goes better with Nazi fights than parading Ewoks? I mean, really. Points to Randy for forcing Danger Girl into the conversation. That's impressive. The guy likes his Wildstorm books.
It had some Nazi stuff
in it. It's true. He's right. He's right. Good job, Randy. Always good to hear from you. But now, guess what? Amy from North Dakota is back. The ladies love us again, Joey. Let's celebrate. They love us, but they hate fucking Nazis.
Hey guys, Amy calling in, Amy and D on the forums, and I'll start with a caveat. My answer to this question is certainly not the best comic about fighting Nazis. There's some really great Cap and Superman stories out there that just blow this out of the water in terms of quality, but I am about to admit right here on the internet that I am a sucker for the DC Elseworld stories. So there, I said it out loud. In particular, I'm talking about a story that was written in the 90s, I guess, by Paul Pope for the Batman Chronicles. But I read it around 2011 or 2012 when I picked up an Elseworlds collection. It's called The Berlin Batman, and it takes place in Germany in 1939. Batman, or Baruch Wayne, is a Jewish painter and a rich philanthropist by day. And then by night, he becomes the Batman who goes around striking fear into the hearts of all who support the Third Reich after his parents are murdered by an anti-Semitic mob, with the help of his friend, of course, Commissar Gorton, who, spoilers, turns out to be a Nazi sympathizer. But the story is bonkers. Batman fights lots of Nazis, then straight blows up a train when he's betrayed by the Commissar, and he can't save the top secret information he's trying to protect. So, in a blaze of exploded train glory, just goes up in smoke. It's pretty cool. It's one of those crazy, just kind of out there Elseworld stories that we know and love from DC, but it was the first pop in my brain when I read this question because there's some pretty sweet panels of Batman pummeling Nazis. I kind of had a hard time buying Jim Gordon, or I guess his counterpart, as a villain, but it's still an interesting premise, and anything is possible in the Elseworlds, I guess. Later, nerds.
I didn't read that.
I never read it either.
How you guys are coming up with stuff that we've never heard of, and that doesn't happen very often. I'm impressed. I had no idea there was a Jewish Batman story, is what I'm trying to say.
No, Matt, he wasn't a Jewish Nazi.
I had no clue. I've never seen this Elseworld book, and now I want to find it. Thank you, Amy. Good to hear from you again, and always nice to have some lady power on the show. I appreciate it. But now we got to check in with a THN Master of Coin, Stephen Fino. We haven't heard from him for a little bit. Nice to hear back from you, Stephen. Oh, I think I know where he's going with this one. Intro. The Cap song.
Hello again, this is Lord Stephen, Master of Coin, sending in my answer to the question of the week. It is very much the obvious answer, but I'm still going with it. It is Captain America 1, published in December of 1940.
Okay.
It is the issue that features the famous cover of Captain America punching Adolf Hitler in the face. True, that does not actually happen in the issue, but it's still a fantastic image, and I have a poster of it hanging up on my wall. What really makes this issue special, however, is just what it stands for. When Captain America came out, there was still a full year left before America actually joined World War II. But right out of the get-go, before America was even there, he's fighting the Nazis. Two Jewish boys from New York saw what was going on in Europe. They said, nope, we're not going to stand for it. And they wrote about it with their work. And this was something that would be extremely controversial in the time, as America was still trying to cling to being impartial with what was going on there. And not only did they decide to make their stand of pro-America, they looked at what was going on over there, and they said, you guys want an Aryan Superman? Okay, we'll give you an Aryan Superman. And he's going to kick your ass. So although it's the obvious answer, I am going with Captain America 1 for my answer for the best Nazi fighting story in comics. See ya.
Who will campaign door to door for America? Carry the flag shore to shore for America. From home open to Spokane. The Star-Spangled Banner wins the flag.
Hey, that was fun. And certainly a classic. Can't argue with that. Cap 1.
Oh, absolutely.
Come on.
Probably one of the most famous Nazi fighting comics ever.
Probably the most famous Nazi fighting comic book ever. Nicely done, Steven. Always good to hear from you, buddy. Steven, you know. Cap number one. Very well produced call, too. He's gotten much better. He sounds great.
I like it.
Yeah. Let's go to Harv, our buddy Harvey Locus. You may have heard him on the regular show last week. He also had the answer of the week. This guy's been busy, but we love hearing from him.
Hey, nerds. Locust here. Back when Excalibur first started getting off the ground, there was a big event that happened, I'd say about a year into its run. leading up to that event, that event was called the Cross Time Caper, by the way. Yeah, we won't go there. But leading up to that event, there was a couple issues where Cap Britain and crew got sucked into Widget and sent to a different dimension where we found the Nazi version of Excalibur.
Oh, I remember this.
Now, this was great. This, I like this for a couple of reasons. One, it's what kind of introduced me into, and I'm not sure if this is where it started, but it's what introduced me into the idea of the Captain Britain Corps, which comes into play later on in the series. But it also has a really moving moment because, as we all know, Kitty Pryde was a founding member of Excalibur. Kitty Pryde is a Jew. So when you have a Jew in the Nazi Excalibur, what do? You make her a ghost. Yeah, and it's pretty haunting stuff. She and our Kitty confronts her. And they're like, oh my God, what'd you do? And she's like, oh my God. Anyway, running out of time, so I'm gonna put some pictures up on the forums of those panels that I'm talking about with Kitty Pryde talking to Ghost Kitty Pryde.
Yeah, I remember. Go
check
that.
Those out, and I'll try to put up a picture of the Nazi Excalibur too. Later, guys.
Good call, good story, and Locust pimping his own forum posts. That's awesome.
That dude knows how to cross promote.
I love it. Nice job, Harv. That was a good one.
Again, I have not read this.
Oh, I read the hell out of those. I loved Excalibur back in the day.
The Cross Time Caper.
Oh, I slogged right through the Cross Time Caper, man.
Didn't it run like 20 issues or something?
It did. It's like the series started like that, too. I'm just like, ah. Like the beginning of some of Claremont's madness, as I recall. It was like, everything should take place in and out of time. So nothing matters. Great. Great call, Harv. Love hearing from you. Right now, we got to go up to the Great White North. Not quite Canada, but close. Maine, the home of the Orca himself.
Hello, boys. This here's the Orca. With your rampant tattiness as of late, I've had a chance to sample the other Inner Circle Jerk podcast. I guess I'm glad that Paul Hogan found work. Inner Circle Jerk. I think he likes the Doom Patrol more than he likes knives and Subarus. I got real excited when the all-girl podcast included video. Then I watched it. Bottom line is, I like your boy's strategy here. Hang out with the special needs kids and you're bound to look pretty smart. Keeps us listeners loyal and respecting your brilliance. Well done. Enough of that, though. On to the answer. I fought in the big one. And despite my expert main marksmanship, I didn't kill me a single Nazi that I know of. Sure, I was probably responsible for a few less Reichsmen in the world, but war is too chaotic to ever know for sure. The thing about war is it rarely resembles what Hollywood or comic writers give us. I admit, I'm a little sensitive about this, but no one can capture the horror of war. There are no punches thrown. There are no knife fights in a shell brick building a la Saving Ryan's Privates. Real weapons f*** it up, and you don't know what's coming. I saw my bunkmate lose four limbs by way of a 50 cal that we never even saw. Nowadays, Teddy would have gone on to stardom doing nugget porn. But in those days, he just lived out a horrible existence for 10 or 12 more years and then died. My point is this. I can't wrap my head around Cap drop-kicking the Red Skull, knowing that one of them would have been vaporized by tank shells before they even got close. Maybe the Red Skull would have been a puddle Cap stepped in on his daily match. Maybe Cap would have been a stain in the tall grass that the skull spit tobacco into on his way to the next village in the French countryside. But talking smack and wrestling for a pistol just out of reach? It wouldn't go down like that. The only Nazi fiction I like either makes fun of it and is way over the top, like Steve Mannion's Fearless Dawn, or going the other way at least tries to make people understand how much scarier war is than anything we can imagine. Best example of that is Kurt Vonnegut's Slaughterhouse-5. If every world leader read that, we'd be done with war for good.
Couldn't agree more.
Sorry to be the party pooper this week. In my old age, my softer side shows through more and more. Next week, we'll get back to stories of cherry popping and wheelbarrows full of cocaine. Everyone's favorite pastimes. Until then, kiss kiss, boys.
I have no idea if this is true or false, but that was chilling, dark, humorous.
Well, I think we can both agree that he didn't really fight in the big one.
Who knows? I bought it. He took me there, man.
But I received his point all the same.
Yeah.
Apologies to Mike Garvey of the Waiting for Doom podcast and the ladies that run the Comics Hangout.
To be fair, both
fine programs on the Inner Circle Comics Network.
He makes fun of us just as much. That's how he shows love.
It's true.
All right. It's true. Thank you for your call, sir, as always.
And really, your downloads are the only thing that counts.
It's true. You don't have to listen. Just download it, please. Let's move to Jesse Kiefer. Remember Jesse?
I do.
We interviewed that friggin' guy.
Tank Monkey.
Yeah, I think we may have accidentally made him listen to the show. All I have to do is go out and interview 100,000 people and we will have 100,000 new listeners.
Yes.
It's incredible. There you go. We've got the format. This is great. We could tell the Nerdist to fuck off. We don't need your help.
Gentlemen, hello. This is Jesse from GrawlixPodcast.com. Now, before I give you my answer, I just wanted to say how awesome it was to table next to you guys at O-Comic-Con. The energy that you guys bring to your show is infectious. No, seriously. It took about a week for that rash to go away.
Hey-oh.
Yeah. Anyways, on to my answer. Now, my answer is either going to be the fringe answer, or this is going to be like the fourth time you've heard this answer, because I don't feel like with Nazis, there's a whole lot of room for middle ground.
Sounds like there's pugs.
I mean, it's not a limbo contest or anything, but it's probably one of the lowest points in the history of our species. One of our greatest sins. Now, who can I think of that's better at undoing sins, especially the sins of man? That's right. I'm talking about Jesus Christ. Now, before you shut the door in my face, I promise I'm talking about a comic, not a chick track. Jesus Christ is the name of the gun, published by Bad Karma Productions in 2009, with writing by Eric Peterson and art by Ethan Nicole. That's right, the mastermind behind Axe Cop.
Oh, yeah.
Disobeying the will of his father.
What?
Jesus Christ travels through time on a mission to fix the greatest tragedies of history with guns blazing. In volume one, subtitled A Hollow Cost, Christ starts with Nazi Germany. Wow, I did not see that coming. Bullets, monsters, and mutants abound as Christ's mission to kill Hitler is not without unforeseen challenges. Yeah, this blasphemous romp may be the greatest Nazi story ever told. That's my answer, guys. Keep spreading the good news.
What was the name of the book?
Jesus Christ in the Name of the Gun.
In the Name of the Gun.
Yeah.
Blown away. That is a deep cut. And Kiefer thought maybe four guys or so were calling in, like, saying that. Come on. That is the deepest cut. I love that answer.
That's a great answer. Welcome aboard, Jesse.
Welcome aboard, Jesse. And that fidelity. Man, that was beautiful. That man sounds as gorgeous as he looks. Cute guy. If you ever get a chance to meet him. Cute looking dude.
Tell him we said hey.
Jesus Christ mowing down Nazis with guns. I mean, what more can you ask for? Come on. Thank you for your call, Jesse. We loved being next to you too. And we loved your interview. If you want to hear an interview with Jesse, you can go to our Tumblr page. Joe Patrick sat down with him and they rapped about his book, Tank Monkey. And the titular line of Tank Monkey is, he's got a tank.
It's a monkey that drives a tank.
It's a good time. But right now, it's toots time.
Hey, me boyos, it's toots time.
Holy shit.
My answer of the week. I'm going to go with, you guys kind of shook this off, but I think it's actually a really great question. My favorite Nazi in comic books? Oh, man. It is Ilsa Hauptmann from the Hellboy series, Wake the Devil. That gal, holy crap, what a driven mad woman. I love her. Gets Rasputin raised up. Then she even sacrifices herself in an Iron Maiden to give her blood to Hecate. Or, what, I don't know how you say that goddess's name. Hecate. Anyways, bam, that's my favorite Nazi. But that wasn't your question. Your question is favorite Nazi storyline, or storyline with Nazis in it, or whatever it is. For that, I'm going to go with Scott Lobdell and Travis Charest's Wildcats X-Men, The Golden Age.
That was awesome.
What a fun book. You have Wolverine, when he's just a agent for the Canadian government. He hasn't gone through Weapon X yet, so he doesn't have his skeleton. He doesn't have his claws, but he's got his healing power, and he's got his scent and everything like that. And he is a tough son of a bitch. And he teams up with Zealot from the Dakota Assassin from the Wildcats. And they have all kinds of fun banter fighting Nazis who have teamed up with the Daemonites, which are the alien race from the Wildcats series. Oh, man, it's such fun. It's beautifully illustrated. There you have it. My answer. Good night.
I'm not sure what happened there. It sounded like the plane that he was on landed. I don't know. Ilsa Hauptmann was terrifying. She was a really scary Nazi. I'm trying to think of the other guy that wore the gas mask, though.
Yeah, it starts with a K.
He was so scary. He was like Krieg or something like that, or Krieg. I can't remember. I remember reading something about like his bio, and like when he, instead of blood, he had like small beetles that crawled through his veins. Like, he was gross. Wildcats, X-Men, The Golden Age. That was a fantastic storyline. It was like a three-part. There was the Golden Age, Silver Age, and then Modern Age. And they were all three really, really
Dark
good.
Age. It was the Dark Age.
Oh, the Dark Age. That's right. That's right. They were all Cronin. Fantastic. Cronin. That was his name. He was so creepy. Loved him. And they really wasted him in the movie. Just didn't work so well.
Oh, I thought he was good in the movie. He had a lot of good moments in the movie.
He wasn't as cool as I remember him being.
Yeah, they stabbed him and dust came out.
Yeah. I liked it better when you had beetles in him.
Oh, jeez. I'm gross. Sorry. It wasn't gross enough.
Thank you, Toots. He was very excited to call us this week. The man loves his Nazis. What can you say? I get it. Let's go to the only Google voicemail call. It comes from our favorite little buddy and young listener who probably shouldn't be listening to the show unaccompanied, Danny. Just so Danny's parents know, there are some adult situations on this show.
Hey guys, it's Danny, and I'm here to tell you about my favorite Nazi fighting comic. But first I'd like to say, Joe, that's a great idea about the Wes Anderson universe.
Yeah!
I grew up watching, like, The Life Aquatic. My dad even had Steve Zissou-styled shoes because he loves Wes Anderson. I always quote Fantastic Mr. Fox with my sister, who I'm going to also be giving an answer for her, too. All right, so my answer is Ivar the Time Walker. I think it may be indirect, but in the first volume, they had to save the girl from all the Nazis and everything, and then all those time travelers are trying to kill Hitler. It was actually pretty cool. And, I mean, it may not be focused all around Nazis, like something like Captain America, but it's still good. My sister chose the early X-Men series, like in First Class, where Magneto as a kid is hunting down all those old Nazi crime lords or whatever. She loves that movie. I love it, too. And, yeah, this is kind of her first answer, indirectly again, but still her first answer. Thanks, guys. Bye.
Danny finds a way to cheat and sneak in two answers.
We're going to allow it.
By inventing a sister that may or may not exist.
Is
until
my
I
sister,
see a picture, I don't, I'd say it.
My sister in Canada.
Hey, yeah. She moved away years ago, but I remember her telling me. Danny, solid answer. Ivar Time Walker is a super fun book. Fred Van Lente writes it for Valiant, time travel book. It is awesome. Everybody should be reading that. Valiant comics are great. So are you, Danny. Thank you for your call. And your little sister was right. That scene with Magneto going after like the Nazi war criminals living in South America was fucking awesome. That was so cool.
Did you need to cuss for Danny?
It's going to get bleeped anyway.
Uh-huh.
Give me a break. He listens to the show. He knows the score. And our final caller called us while driving home, and he's sorry for the background noise. Ladies and gentlemen, I give you first time, long time.
Hello, lads. Yeah, it's my. It's a, I'm a first time, long time caller, and You know, with this question, it was not easy for me, you know, with all the Nazis. It's not too many comic books I've read with Nazis. You know, I don't read too much of the Marvel, so I didn't, you know, I didn't read any old Captain America, and I didn't read, like, Superman from, like, the 1930s and 40s, so, or maybe even 50s, I don't know, was it Nazis or not? I didn't read it, so, the only Nazis I know of, I know there's, you know, in the old DC universe, when you had your Earth 10, I know that they had Nazis. It was a Superman Nazi, a Batman Nazi, a Wonder Woman Nazi, a Flash Nazi. I knew they had Nazis, but that's not defeating them, is it really? No, it's not, because they're Nazis and they're the superheroes, so it's not the same. The only Nazi I could think of that was, you know, fighting, where the superhero fought the Nazis, was, and probably, somebody's probably brought it up, but was that Dark Knight? Was it 2, 1, 2, whatever? Whatever that was, you know, with that one, the female Nazi, you know the one? Well, she's got the swastika on her bits, on her lady bits. No, not the bottom bits. Well, maybe, you couldn't see the bottom bits, but on her top, on her upper, you know, the top lady bits. Big old swastikas tattooed on her lady bits. Just one on, you know what I'm talking about, don't you? Where her ninnies were. And it was yes. Right there, big swastikas on it. And, he defeated her. She was crazy. She was, it wasn't right. She was really, really wrong in the head. And so they defeated her. Batman defeated her. And he was dressed as, I think, as an old lady. Or maybe that was in the movie. I don't know. So that's my answer, whatever that is. All right. Thanks, boys. What?
Do you have the slightest clue what he's talking about?
Yes. Okay. Yes. Yes.
In help him out.
The
help
Dark Knight. In Frank Miller's The Dark Knight Returns, there's one of the ladies has giant swastikas tattooed over her breasts.
Okay. All right. Now I can see it. Got it.
She's clearly not right.
I would argue anyone who puts tattoos on their boobs.
And he's not sure about
her. But if you're sticking swastikas on there, even more so.
And he's not sure about her downtown bits because you can't see those.
You can't see them. I get it. Probably something down there too. Yeah. Thank you, first time, long time. You sounded sort of like Mick Jones from The Clash, so I'm going to give you a Brixton accent. I don't really know. I don't spend enough time in old London town, but
yeah, why not?
Definitely there. Always nice to hear from you, Joe Patrick. Now is the time of the show where we are forced to pick our favorite caller. I'm going to go first, and mine is going to go to Toots, because I loved Wildcats X-Men: The Golden Age. It was awesome. Had a Travis Cherest cover. It was beautiful. Wonderful, wonderful story. X-Men and Wildcats fighting Nazis. And why wouldn't the Nazis sign up the Demonites? They believe, you know, hey, we're the master race. Let's just combine it with aliens. Makes sense, right? That was great.
Man, you know what? I'm tempted to give it to Jesse Kiefer.
It's a good one.
For that way out of the box answer, but I think I'm giving it to Danny's sister.
Really?
Because I could have watched an entire movie of young Magneto fighting Nazis.
I could have as well, but we are not certain that Danny has a sister yet. We need proof first.
We don't need proof. I'm giving it.
All right.
The proof is that I have given her an award.
All right, all right, all right. I want a smiling picture of your sister in our email. That's what I want.
Holding a fictional award.
Holding yes. Her birth certificate with her Christian name on it.
I could have watched an entire movie of young Michael Fassbender hunting Nazi war criminals.
It was so cool. Yeah.
When it went back to the X-Men, I was like, what is this bullshit?
That is a good one. Let's get into ours. We hate Nazis. Let's get into ours because we freaking hate Nazis. As you know, Matt Bomstein of Jewish descent. I got some rotten feelings about those guys. I am going to go with a Fantastic Four story that I read when I was very young. Fantastic Four, Volume 1, number 292, July 1986. I was but a young lad. And at the time, John Byrne was writing and drawing the Fantastic Four. Reed Richards had not been there for a while. He died. And we had Nick Fury running around, leading Fantastic Four. It was Nick, She-Hulk, Invisible Girl, and the Human Torch. I believe the Thing was off sulking somewhere. He may have been wearing a helmet during that time.
No, that the helmet came in the 90s, man.
Oh, no, that's right.
He remember, he stayed on Battleworld after Secret Wars.
Oh, that's
so
right.
She-Hulk was on the team.
Yeah, he was wandering around Battleworld at the time. So there's this guy. The story was called The Man Who Dreamed the World. And there was a guy named Joseph Calhoun. And I can't remember what his deal was, but he had, like, mutant powers. And he accidentally had a dream that rebuilt the world in 1936 that the Fantastic Four got sucked into. And there, Hitler, they end up in Nazi Germany. Hitler's there. And guess who's got a serious mad on for Hitler?
Nick Fury.
Nick Fury fucking hates that guy. Former Howling Commando Nick Fury is like, well, while we're here, I'm going to shoot Hitler in the head. And they start talking and they're like, well, wait a minute. We don't know if we're actually in 1936. They didn't know that they got pulled into this guy's dream, right? So they didn't know if they were actually in 1936. What if they do kill Hitler? It changes history. Everything is different. And they're like, Reed's not here for like to tell us what the ramifications of something like this is. But dude, you can't kill Hitler. And Fury goes berserk because he like realizes, oh my God, they're probably right. Here I am with a chance to end World War II, save all my buddies that died, and I can't do it because I might screw up the time stream. But then he says, fuck it, and shoots Hitler anyway. Shoots Hitler. They get sucked out of the dream world, and it changes reality in a very minute way. It just brings Mr. Fantastic back from the dead. Turns out he didn't die. Hooray! He's back on the team. But the story was, kind of a weird ending. But the story was so cool because it was like young Matt Bomb reading about this moral dilemma. Here's your chance to kill Hitler and end the war. And they can't. They can't do it.
Yeah.
They have to let these atrocities take place so that history will play out. Oh, man. This is back when John Byrne was kicking ass on Fantastic Four.
That's a pretty good one.
Loved that story.
That's a pretty good one.
Joe Patrick's upset with his choice.
I'm not upset with my choice. I had a really hard time picking one because I don't know what it is. I didn't read a ton of war comics growing up. And for some reason,
not really a war comic.
No superhero versus Nazi stories really are jumping out at me other than in a very broad sense. Like, I love the idea that the reason in the DC universe, the reason why the Justice Society didn't just fly to Germany and end World War II is because Hitler had the Spear of Destiny and no superhumans could enter.
That's right, buddy.
The country. And like, I love the idea that they had to come up with a reason why. It's like, this is a world where Superman exists.
Yeah.
Why is this even a problem?
Yeah, why didn't you just go eat it, Hitler?
Because of magic. Because of magic. And even the Spectre couldn't do it. But that's just kind of a broad like plot point that I really appreciated. I thought about DC The New Frontier, but I don't remember there being a lot of actual Nazi fighting in that. That was really more...
Yeah, it was sort of post-World War II.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So it finally clicked. I remembered a comic that I read when I was really young. I was a big fan of DC Blue Ribbon Digest, which was a series of, they were like the little Archie Digest, right?
Oh, right,
and you could
right.
get them at supermarkets and stuff.
Right.
And they were reprints, and they were all themed. And I'm sure I've mentioned this 1,000 times on the show, but like one month it would be like best Superman stories about kryptonite or here's one to completely devoted to the Legion of Superheroes.
Right.
And then every year they would put out one that was the year's best comic stories.
Okay.
And I had that one for 1983, and it had a pretty kick-ass Legion story and a really terrifying Swamp Thing story that ended on a cliffhanger, and I never found out how it ended. But in that book was a story reprinting Sergeant Rock 361 or 261 from 1983.
Give or take 100 issues.
The Sergeant Rock comic from 1983 with the title Keep Me Alive.
Okay.
I think it was 361.
I'll look that up for you. Go.
And the story is Sergeant Rock and Easy Company have to keep this soldier alive.
361.
Thank you. In the face of completely overwhelming odds. And despite the fact that this dude has so many holes in him, he is like a colander. Like, there is nothing keeping this guy alive except his sheer force of will and Sergeant Rock and his men putting their bodies in front of his to soak up all the bullets.
Oof.
And the only reason they're doing it is because he made a promise to some orphan girl in a village and he had to get back to her to deliver on this promise before he died. And so, like, he made Rock promise, keep me alive, Rock, keep me alive.
Man.
Get me back to the village.
Saint Antoine.
Yeah.
Saint Antoine.
Oh, man. There's a reason why I understand it's a DC book. picking the year's best comic book stories from DC Comics.
Well, still.
But that was an amazing story.
Joe Kubert was your cover artist, written by Robert Kaniger, art by Frank Redondo.
Yeah.
There you go.
It's great. But that does not act, that's really not about fighting Nazis so
sure
much.
Sure is.
So I do have a backup story. Oh, that, I do have a backup that I just want to mention because
you and friggin' Danny. Here
no,
we go.
I just want to bring this up because it's totally ridiculous.
Okay, okay.
In the 90s, I was a big fan of the comic book Web of Spider-Man. For some reason.
Who wasn't?
That was my go-to.
It was great.
And there was an issue. I think it was, it doesn't matter what issue it was. It was like 59 or 60. It may have been a two-parter even. Superman teams up with a Rocket Racer. Spider-Man teams up with a Rocket Racer. And there is civil unrest on a college campus being led by a bunch of neo-Nazis. And one of the neo-Nazis, this dude gets coated in chemicals or there's an industrial accident and he becomes some sort of amorphous blob creature that he like literally like the blob from the movie where he turns into this giant gelatinous pile that absorbs people and dissolves them to bones. And he called himself Skinhead. And he was this giant rolling blob that was self-aware and he could control where his skin went. And he still had the swastika tattoo on his cheek. So it was like a Nazi pudding, a Nazi pile of pudding going around disintegrating people with his acid skin. And what Spider-Man found out, because he is a scientist,
of course,
is that even though he was this blob that
Web of Spider-Man 56.
Yeah. Okay. And so even though he was this blob that you could just like throw your hand into and nothing would happen to him, he was still moving to dodge in certain, for some reason, like, why is he dodging when I can't hurt him? And Spider-Man discovered dude's skeleton is still inside there controlling it like a puppet.
Gross.
And so Spider-Man dives into Skinhead pudding.
Gross.
And he's got to swing wildly in there. He can't see. And he's only got seconds before he starts to dissolve him.
Ooh.
And he finally just clocks him right in the jaw, knocks him out, reverts him back to human form. And then you find out that Skinhead's dad is a rabbi. He's Jewish.
Ooh, ain't that just a way?
Twist!
His real name was Eddie Cross. This is according to MarvUNAPP.com. I don't even know what that is. Eddie Cross. He was a neo-Nazi terrorist.
What that website is real quick, it's a wonderful resource. It is a website. It is a Marvel handbook of obscure background characters.
Cool.
And that's it.
Thank you for doing this, whoever you are. He's a neo-Nazi terrorist, former college student, group membership, Sons of the Serpent.
Yeah.
Former leader of an unnamed white supremacist group.
Yeah.
His enemies, Captain Marvel, the black one, Monica Rambeau, makes sense. Rocket Racer, black dude.
I only ever read him in that one story.
Known relatives, Rabbi Chaim Cross, his father. First appearance, Web of Spider-Man 56, created by Jerry Conway,
right.
Alex Saviuk and Keith Williams.
Yep.
His powers and abilities, Skinhead possesses the ability to enlarge and manipulate his cellular structure from his skeleton into a massive amount of amorphous flesh. Gross. Great question. This was a ton of fun. Historical. It was tied into D-Day. We love that stuff. You guys pose a question that's like tied into something that's happening this week, you're totally going to get your question on the show. Okay. Hint, hint. There you go.
Man, don't tell them how the sausage is made.
Thank you, everybody that called in. Thank you, Amy. Good to hear from the ladies again. Thank you, Jesse. Welcome aboard. First time caller. That was fantastic.
Thank you, Danny's sister, if you even exist.
If you're a real person. We want to hear from more of you. We want more first time callers.
Danny, you better tell her that she got my favorite.
All right. It's been a little while. Thank you so much, you guys. We'll have another episode of a Two-Headed Nerd comic book podcast coming next week. But right now, Joe, I need you to tell the kids what our latest, newest, and bestest question ever is.
This week's question, again.
Black Scorpion the Three.
Three for three. Black Scorpion the Three, the Goocher.
He gets the Goocher.
2 weeks ago, despite the best efforts of our bald, psychotic Governor Pete Ricketts, Nebraska lawmakers voted to end the death penalty. What do you think about killing in comics, more specifically? What do you think about heroes killing in comics? When is it okay? or is it okay for heroes to kill?
A morality question. Comic book morality, my favorite kind.
We're really going to weed out the sickos. Because
real morality is so f***ing boring to talk about. Can't wait to hear your answers. And I wouldn't call him our friend, but Alec Baldwin is going to tell you how you can get them to us. And I'm just, let's just say it. I'm sorry for whatever he's going to say next. It's nice.
And you know, I saw some dissatisfaction on the forums with Alec Baldwin.
For now, folks, this is the Two-Headed Nerd, signing off.
My favorite Nazi villain was the fascist judge that sentenced me to do free voice work for this steaming pile of shit that you two morons call a show. Too bad he didn't mention anything about having to do it sober. If you'd like to answer the question of the week, you can leave Joe and Matt a message at 402-819-4894. Send your MP3 answer to twoheadednerd@gmail.com. Or leave a Skype message for the username Two-Headed Nerd. Share the air and keep your answer under 2 minutes, please, or the Power Mad Shrimp will cut you off. What is it with short people anyway? They piss me off more than the goddamn NRA.